Okay, everybody, sorry for the little bit of delay in the start. The microphones decided, that microphone knew I was not John Pashong, and it wouldn't turn on for me, so we had to readjust. But welcome, and I'd like to ask everyone to rise for the flag salute, please. And a few public reminders, there are hearing devices available on each side of the podium. The board chambers are T-coil compatible for hearing devices. Anyone who wishes to speak this morning needs to fill out a speaker slip. You can find them in the back in the little holder back there and state their name for the record when they come to the podium. And anything that is presented must be turned into the county clerk for the record. With that, I'm going to ask the clerk if there are any changes to the agenda.
There's an added item to consent as item number 21, a request for the Board of Supervisors to rescind the appointment of Christine Wilmack as Director of the Los Osos Community Services District in District 2. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour notice and requirement.
Great. And with that, we're going to open the floor to public comment on consent items only. Welcome, Mayor Harmon. Welcome. and we'll begin with Craig Piper, followed by Eric Greening, please.
Hi, good morning. Craig Piper with County Airports. I just, on item three, just a clarification or correction on the actual letter on the subject. It has an incorrect dollar amount for the request that we're making. All other areas on the transmittal are correct. So the $15,096,200 is not the correct number. The correct number is $15,146,200. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Greening, and Eric will be followed by Lindy Owen.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Eric Greening on consent item 12, the appointment to the Water Resources Advisory Committee of a member and alternate representing the Estrella El Pomar Creston Water District. I just wanted to share with you that on September 5th, the RAC voted 20-2 to recommend that your board give this district representation. There were multiple reasons behind this recommendation. One that I want to highlight is that the Shandon San Juan District already is represented on the RAC, and the Estrella El Pomar Creston District is organized in exactly the same way. Having one of two comparable districts represented in the absence of the other would raise a serious equity issue. Now, I'm speaking as an individual here, not formally representing the RAC, just reporting what I saw and heard at its September 5th meeting. As an individual, you will remember that a few years ago, I shared the concern of Supervisors Arnold and Compton that the county was overreaching in spending $1 million in standing in for an imaginary district at LAFCO, the product of special state legislation, to accelerate the Sigma process. I believed we should wait for a real district or districts to come forward. The people of the Paso Robles Basin said no to state and county assumptions. After they had voted down the county-imposed district, real districts arising from the people of the Paso Robles Basin have indeed chosen to organize themselves on their own terms and come forward. I hope Supervisors Arnold and Compton will welcome their initiative, that Supervisors Hill and Gibson will welcome the voluntary forward movement in the basin, and that Supervisor Pashong, who I guess isn't here, will welcome the new entity, the majority of which is in his district, organized largely by his constituents. The RAC needs to hear and include the voices of these initiative takers and active participants in the solutions for the Paso Robles Basin. Please let them in. Thank you.
And Lindy Owen will be followed by Christine Womack.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos, and I wanted to speak on item 21. the election in Los Osos. Basically, the listing was for three full four-year terms for new CSD members, and what happened was that only two of them were put on the ballot, leaving the two-year term that should have been another two-year election kind of got missed. I know that Tommy Gong has taken the responsibility for this, but I also want to include the head of the CSD board, Vicki Millage, as well as county council, and ultimately Christine Womack also. They were aware that this glitch had happened, and whether there was any conversation or not, I believe that at this point, the best way to straighten it out is to move on and probably do a two-year appointment to resume the four-year cycle back in November of 2022. Any costs incurred, I believe, should be taken, should be handled by the county, because ultimately it was a county error. Thank you.
Thank you. Christine Womack, followed by Vicki Millage.
Hi, my name is Chris Womack. I'm the appointed incumbent for the Los Osos CSD. I've lived in Los Osos for just over 10 years. I've been a financial advisor for 21 years. I have a 9-year-old daughter who attends Teach Elementary. I also serve as treasurer for LOCAC, am immediate past president of the South Bay Women's Network, have helped give many scholarships to Cuesta College reentry students as scholarship chair, served on Baywood Elementary's PTA for 4 years, and helped run a STEAM club teaching 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders how to create their own yearbook. When I heard the Los Osos CSD couldn't pass its own audit, I was concerned and wanted to understand why. I was offered a position later on a CSD committee, and I requested to serve on the Financial Advisory Committee. When I got there, we were in a bit of a crisis. The CSD was running low on money. The previous year, they'd set the lowest tier water rate very low to encourage people to save water. The rate was set at about half of tier rates of other water districts in Slo County. Forecasting is difficult. The year prior, an estimate had been made that if asked to conserve water, Los Osos residents might reduce consumption by 10%. I'm very proud of the fact that my town, in fact, reduced consumption by 30%. The unintended consequence is we had a financial shortfall. No one has a crystal ball. It's okay to be wrong. It's not okay to stay wrong. We need to pay what it costs to purvey water, or else we can't repair infrastructure as it breaks and make improvements as they're needed. I helped facilitate a course correction. My skill set proved helpful, and I was asked to apply for the open CSD seat. Recently, as CSD director, I've been reviewing the bonds we have outstanding. We're currently paying 5% on a 5-year and 15-year bond. It looks like we could refinance them and pay around 3.5%. This could save us $104,000 to $110,000 a year. With 4,192 properties in the sewer assessment zone, this averages to be about $375 to $400 per property. I own one of those properties. I'd like to keep $400 in my pocket. I'm sure my neighbors would too. This error with my seat is unfortunate. I was prepared to campaign for a 4-year term and was told the appointed incumbent was a 2-year term. I had no reason to doubt this information. I believe the Board of Supervisors should follow council and staff advice and on this matter. Thank you.
Vicki Millage, followed by Stephen Best.
Good morning. I'm Vicki Millage, and I am the current president of the Los Osos CSD Board, and I am here speaking for myself. Tommy Gong, county clerk recorder, made a mistake during the 2018 election process when he advised Los Osos resident Ms. Christine Womack to run for a 2-year term as a CSD director instead of one of the 3 4-year terms the Los Osos CSD submitted for the ballot. As Ms. Womack has said, she had every intention of running for one of the four-year terms. Mr. Gong brought up the notion of running for a two-year term. He gave her a choice, and she eventually chose the two-year term. No additional candidates applied to run for that term, essentially electing Ms. Womack to that seat. Mr. Gong then removed Ms. Womack from the ballot before it was published. After the elections, Mr. Gong did not contact the Los Osos CSD to discuss the issue. Mr. Gong's first contact with the CSD was on November 14th. By this time, Mr. Gong had already talked to the press, stating that the error was on his staff's part and that no one until recently had advised the clerk recorder's office of the mistake. His initials are on the declaration of candidacy, no one else's. The error is his and his alone. Everyone makes mistakes. How we deal with our mistakes reveals a great deal about our maturity and our character. The mature way to deal with a mistake begins with acknowledging your responsibility for the error to all affected parties, followed by cleaning up the mess you made as quickly and as thoroughly as possible. After that, you figure out how not to make that mistake again. And you never, ever throw your innocent staff under the bus, especially when you were the one who made the mistake. Mr. Gong, in his latest apology, has reduced the situation to a clerical error. That phrasing belittles the work that the Los Osos CSD Board of Directors must now do to find the path forward. It is now up to the Los Osos CSD Board of We do not relish this task, and we will perform it in the best interests of Los Osos residents. And I would like to give you a bit of a timeline of this process. On May 17, 2018, the county sent out the election paperwork. Our CSD staff received the notice to county elections, election offices to be filled. The notice clearly stated that there were three full terms to be filled in Los Osos. June 8th. June 26th, the clerk recorder's office sent the notice of election paperwork, which stated 2 4-year terms and 1 2-year term. Our general manager called the clerk recorder's office to advise them that the paperwork was wrong, that it was 3 4-year terms. Staff said that on Chris Womack's declaration of candidacy, Tommy Gong had changed Ms. Womack's form to state a 2-year term. He had crossed out her 4-year term and substituted it for 2 years. And he initialed it. The Los Osos staff then posted the documents that we had.
Thank you so much. Stephen Best, followed by Vita Miller.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Best. I can't remember ever missing an opportunity to vote since my first election in 1972, the Nixon-McGovern race. And our right to vote is such a privilege. Even more so, the right to run for office in a free and fair election for what we believe in is sacrosanct, or it should be. As per the CSD resolution 2018-11, the Los Osos had three full-year seats on the ballot with the county recorder's office. And at one point, there were 5 candidates registered to run for those 3 seats. Ms. Womack was on the board when that resolution was adopted, and so she knew about that resolution and voted for it. On August 9th, the day before the registration deadline expired on August 10th, Ms. Womack met with recorder Tommy Gong and asked to change her application from a 4-year full term to a 2-year half term. She was appointed to the seat to complete the balance of John Eric Storm's full term, which is published on their website, and there were 8 months yet to serve. Without precedent or CSD approval, the second ballot item was created where one of the 3 seats was moved to a slot by itself. Only Christine Womack was in that slot and running unopposed for the 2-year half term, which did not legally exist. It was never announced at the CSD, I have all the records to that, or published online until after the deadline. It did not appear in the sample ballots, and the public had no say in this matter. This also changed the equation of the voters in their choices and selection for the four candidates, now competing for only the two seats. As per election code, the unopposed candidate is automatically appointed to the seat, and the election for that seat is canceled. How can one seat be taken off the ballot item and moved to an illegitimate ballot item slot for the sole benefit of one candidate, while the majority of the other candidates unfairly need to compete for the balance of the seats? How can we call that a free and fair election? Unfortunately, I don't believe this is a simple clerical error, and that Ms. Womack was unknowledgeable about the consequences of these events. I also don't understand how Ms. Womack was on the CSD board and how the general manager and the president of the CSD cannot let the situation exist illegally without correction for months. Nobody said anything about this. It was not corrected. If they were negligent or unknowledgeable, then they were complicit in the ballot change. In either case, this is inexcusable.
Thank you, Mr. Best. Thank you.
I was one of the candidates.
Vina Miller, followed by our last speaker, Richard Margeson. If anyone else wishes to speak, grab a slip and
you just said?
Vina Miller.
Vita.
Vita Miller.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I mispronounced it the first time.
Okay, I'm Vita Miller. I'm a longtime resident of Los Osos. I'm not going to go over the scenario and the entire dates because people have already done that. I'm here to question the integrity of the election process and to be certain that justice is brought to the community of Los Osos. We've certainly had a lot of controversy in this community over the years, and now we've added to it. I don't know the scenario of why Ms. Womack went in and had her candidacy statement changed from 4 years to 2 years, but clearly a resolution was passed by the CSD board that it should be 3 4-year terms. There was never another resolution making this a 2-year term, and therefore there were no other candidates who could possibly file for the 2-year term. That seat was handed to her. Somebody knew what was going on. I believe Mr. Gong cannot call this just a clerical error. I'm sorry, that just doesn't seem possible. He initialed the candidacy statement. He changed it from 4 to 2 years. Was he not aware of the election code? I'm just wanting to make certain that we don't ever have anything like this happen again. I'm glad you're taking this action to rescind her appointment to this third seat. I believe that, and by the way, none of this would have been brought to light if it hadn't been from the inquiry by Mr. Best. I believe he's the one who looked into it and who questioned it. I questioned it myself in Los Osos. Why was her term of office extended? It looked like it was a clear extension. I never got an answer. Nobody had an answer. It was a secret. What went on? It isn't until after the election that we all find out what went on. I think there needs to be some questions. I'm hoping that you pull this item from the consent agenda, ask some questions, make Mr. Gong answer those questions. I'm finding it hard to believe that the CSD board chairperson and the general manager wasn't aware of what was going on. That change was made one day before the end of the filing period. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, honest, I am not. But the people of Los Osos deserve to have these questions answered. We deserve to keep the integrity of the election process. I believe that we should open up the third seat to all of the candidates, and actually there were three seats available. There are three top winners. There is Mr. Cesena, who got the most votes. There's Mr. Forcroy, who apparently has a second seat. I don't think that's finalized, and Mr. Best. I think those three seats should go to those three candidates, and that's the only fair way to resolve this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last request to speak is Mr. Margeson.
Richard Margeson, first of all, how does this end up on the consent calendar? I understand that it's just to rescind this appointment, but there's much more to this than just that. The issues that have already been brought up, the application, to my understanding, the public's not allowed to see that. what was written on it, what was crossed out, what was changed? And how does, after decades and decades of elections in Los Osos, how does somebody not bring it to Mr. Gong's attention that we don't have any two-year seats? They're all four-year seats, just like you. There's a rotation. Every 2 years, three are up. The other 2 years, two seats are up. How does this get by? And I can tell you how this is going to play out. The CSD board is going to come back either in, probably in December, and they're going to appoint Ms. Womack. There's already lobbying of the directors to make sure that Steve doesn't get that appointment. A person who came within less than 100 votes of getting that third seat. How do we know Ms. Womack would have won that seat? Steve's the one that's damaged in this process. Steve's the one. And I'll be honest, I didn't support Steve. I supported Chuck Cicina. Chuck Cicina got the most votes. But this is about process and fairness. That board is not going to let Steve Vest assume that seat. Christine Womack is going to get it. This is pathetic. Mr. Best worked hard. He campaigned legitimately like all the other candidates. And he may, when the final tally comes out on Wednesday, he may bridge that 60-some gap, and he may be the second person. Doesn't matter. The process is flawed. It's severely flawed. And I know for a fact that the CSD directors are already lobbying each other to make sure when they make that appointment, it's Christine. And on her embellishing her record, there's one thing I'm going to correct. The correction and restructuring of the water rate structure in Los Osos to make sure the CSD water company or water district has enough money to proceed into the future. That was done by a subcommittee of myself, Ron Munns, who I'm sure you know that name, and Rob Miller from Wallace Group. Christine Womack sat in none of those meetings. No, had no input. That was done by the subcommittee, finance committee, rubber stamped it, went to the board, they rubber stamped the rate structure, which is in place now. This needs to be off consent. This needs to have a full discussion before you proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Markinson. I do have one more request to speak, and it's our county clerk, Tommy Gong. And Tommy, you may end up staying if this is pulled.
Oh, absolutely. Tommy Gong, county clerk recorder. Yeah, I know there's a lot of questions, and I'm here to answer questions regarding how this came to be, this matter came to be. Basically, I will say that in preparation for an election, we're determining the seats for and the terms for each office up for election for each district. This is complicated when you have an elected director who resigns and there is someone who is appointed to fill the vacancy. When that occurs, then depending on when the director resigns, the seat would be up for election for either a full four-year term or the two-year short term. And when we got word that there was a reappointment, that there was an appointment in to fill the vacancy of one of the director resignations, and we got that, it was happening at around the same time as the terms and the office seats for office were being calculated, and during that time was when the error was made to make one of those seats a two-year term. And then it just flowed from there. It was published, so it was publicly noticed. It was in our candidate manual. Yes, I did have a conversation with Ms. Womack regarding her candidacy. Part of the discussion was she suggested running as an appointed incumbent. So with that matter, I said the only way she could do that is to run for the two-year seat, because that was a seat that would be up for election, and that was a seat that she's filling at the time. So she opted to do so, and then I made the changes as we discussed. Also, I just want to say again, I'm very regretful of this mistake that was made. It obviously is a very important process for the Los Osos community, and So whereas we still have an election that's taking place for two of their seats, it was stipulated as two seats to be elected. Voters voted on two of the candidates, of the candidates who filed, and that election is taking place. And we'll have an updated count tomorrow that will reflect many of the provisionals. It won't be everything that will be certified yet. That will happen the following week, but that election will take place. The purpose of the board here for this matter right now is to rescind the appointment of Ms. Womack in place because there isn't a two-year term to be appointed to. So that is really what the course of the matter is for this action. The subsequent actions that are going to take place are at the discretion of the Los Osos CSD board.
Thank you. We don't have any more requests to speak, so we're going to bring it back to the board. And Tommy, if you don't mind staying, I think we'll have some questions for you. But anybody want to pull? Let's start with that.
Madam Chair, I will pull this item for consideration, number 21, I guess it is.
Nothing to pull.
I just have a comment to Mr. Gong.
Okay. I'm going to pull 6, but I'm going to use the chair's discretion to switch the order, and we'll go straight to 21 so we won't leave you standing.
shall we vote the...
This, I'm not pulling for a separate vote. Are you pulling 21 for a separate vote?
No. Okay.
Okay. So we'll just go ahead with questions to Mr. Gong.
All right. Thank you. If I might, Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Gong, could we just be clear as to the order of events and the source of decisions? As I understand it from the paperwork submitted by the CSD and statements of the candidate, Ms. Womack applied to run for a four-year term.
That is correct. She initially filed for that paperwork.
And who decided that she had to run for a two? Who first of all, and beyond that, the CSD, in giving you the information about their election, indicated there were 3 4-year terms to be contested. Is that correct?
Yes, you are correct. So we initiate the communication first to the district. That occurred in May. We show them a list of the candidates that the incumbents that we show on file as running for re-election or who would be up for re-election. And we had, in that case, Mr. Eric Storm's name on our listing. So then it was brought to our attention after the fact that, in fact, he had resigned. We hadn't gotten that information until later that he had resigned and that there was appointment made to fill that vacancy, and that was Ms. Womack. So that was when the key error was made, because the assumption was made that that would be up for a 2-year term, where in fact it should have been a 4-year term.
And it was your decision that she should be applying for a 2-year rather than the 4-year term?
It wasn't my decision. I had a discussion with her about the fact that there were 2 full terms and there was 1 short term remaining up for election. In fact, that she is the incumbent for what we would have classified as the 2-year term.
But in fact, there was no 2-year term.
There wasn't a 2-year term.
And who decided that there was a 2-year term?
That would be me.
Okay. Because the reason I think that's important, there is no conspiracy here. In my conversations with you, you have indicated that you made a mistake in deciding that there were 2 4-year terms and a single 1-year term.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And your initials on the paperwork that Ms. Millage gave to us were
Yeah, I had a conversation with her. She decided to run for the 2-year term, and then I made the changes.
Okay. Thank you. And then, Madam Chair, I have a quick question of County Council. I've had extensive discussions with County Council about a variety of ways forward, but one of the proposals that came in public comment today was that somehow the county could certify the top 3 candidates within the race for the 4-year term. And the 4-year term was contested by 4 separate candidates. We had a suggestion from the public in public comment that we should somehow certify the top 3 rather than rescinding, in addition to rescinding Ms. Womack's appointment. It was suggested that we should certify the top 3 out of that race for the 4-year term. And my discussions with you, that can't happen. And I wonder if you might confirm that.
That's correct. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. And as you know, Supervisor, There were only two candidates on the ballot, so the board's really only going to be able to certify two positions there. Okay. There are a number of options available to the LOCSD board now that there will be, assuming the board, your board takes our recommendation today, there will be a couple of different options for how to fill that vacant seat. Under the law, Ms. Womack can continue to sit in her seat. Her term is actually extended by two different statutory provisions until such time as there's a replacement. But the board, the Los Osos CSD board, can appoint someone to fill that for the remainder of 2 years, or they can wait until November and hold an election.
So. Okay, thank you. I have no further questions. I have some comments, but I would yield them to colleagues if they wanted to discuss this.
Supervisor Hale.
Thank you. Tommy, I just want to get to moving forward on this. With due respect for you being an independently elected officer of the county, in order to move forward and prevent, you know, these, and mistakes happen, and it's understandable, but I think it's important for you to pledge that you will work with our county administrator and his folks and our county council and their folks to going forward from this. Because I think sometimes, you know, and this happens because we have independent officers in organizations important such as yours in our county, that there's a sometimes resistance to wanting to be managed, you know, by our essentially our management staff. And I think we've seen in the past that we want to do this because we are one organization, and this reflects on all of us. And I just want your pledge that, that you will be open to that, because I think it's, you know, nobody's interested in piling up and trying to make things worse. Of course, we're trying to remedy this. But I think moving forward, that's important that you pledge that you will work with our administrative office and county council in addressing any issues that that may have led to any of these kinds of problems.
Yes, I will definitely make some changes to this process, believe me.
And you'll work with our administrative office and county council to do so. Thank you.
Supervisor Compton, did you have a comment?
I have questions for county council. So the error was admittedly made by the clerk recorder's office. If, given the different options, I'm wondering who is going to bear the cost of those different options as they play out. Will that have to be the citizens there, or how will that play out in the different scenarios?
The one option of appointing Ms. Womack to a 2-year term wouldn't really involve any particular costs. If the LOCSD decides instead to hold an election in November, I think we'll have to have a discussion about how to
could it possibly
share or
be
that
those citizens bear that cost if it was not their fault?
Well, I think absent our board making the decision to financially support that election, I believe the LOCSD citizens would have to incur that cost.
So we could make it could
there's, in other questions. Words, I don't think there's anything in the law that compels the county to pick up the cost of that election.
Even if
it would
the
have
county's
to be
heir.
As a matter of, you know, your board trying to make an equitable decision about
there's
it.
So there's the option for us to make an equitable decision. It wasn't the people's fault. And okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
I don't know, Madam Chair, if you had any questions, but I'm ready to make a few comments on this, on how
sure.
we should. First, let me just make sure we are clear in Mr. McNulty's comments. The LOCSD board, if we go down this path, is free to appoint whoever they wish to that position.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And it's in their decision whether to make an appointment or to pursue a general election, which by statute can't occur until November 2019.
That's also correct.
Were that their choice, I would certainly support the county footing the cost of that. And I've had some conversations with the officers of the CSD and appreciate their involvement in this. You know, with this mistake, we're in a very unfortunate situation. It's unfortunate to the voters of Los Osos. It's unfortunate to the candidates who are involved in this election. It's unfortunate for the LOCSD board, who shouldn't have to get involved in deciding their representation because they had indicated they were to move forward in a clean path. And it's unfortunate for this board, because there's really no specified recipe for us to make this correction. So in listening to public comment, I appreciate the comments of all that have been delivered here and appreciate the concerns and frustrations that are expressed. And I think one could fairly argue a number of potential solutions. But as I've been in discussion with county staff over the past few days, I've come to the conclusion that what staff is bringing before us right now is the best of a number of imperfect options. The universe of options, every one of them is imperfect to someone, to voters, to candidates, to boards. But I conclude that this is the best way to move forward, because in the end, it puts this decision as close to the voters of Los Osos as we possibly can, in that it puts the decision in the hands of a board of directors of the CSD that those same voters elected. And so, whereas, again, there's no perfect way out of this, I will support staff's recommendation on this matter. And if there are no further, you had item 6 you wanted to comment on.
Any other questions or comments on item 21? Thank you, Mr. Young. And quickly, I'd just like to pull item number 6, which is an expense report. It's my expense report. I just wanted to share with the public here, with the citizens of the county, that on October 23rd, I was included in a group of local electeds from Alaska, Hawaii, and California who are invited to participate in a White House State Leadership Day conference in Washington, D.C. Over the past few months, every single elected county supervisor in many states, they're called commissioners, was invited to the White House for a similar event, and over 3,000 of these local electeds have attended. We were the last group. October 23rd represented the last of the groups to participate in this unprecedented event. The meeting was hosted by the White House Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, and it gave local officials a chance to discuss their jurisdiction's concerns with those influential in crafting legislation at the federal level. So the leaders participating in the discussion, in other words, that we had an opportunity to back and forth discuss our issues with, included Douglas Hulshear, Deputy Assistant to the President, Director of the White House Intergovernmental Affairs, Bill McKinley, Assistant to the President and the Cabinet Secretary, Secretary Ryan Zinke, Secretary of the Interior, Secretary Elaine Chao, who's our U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary, Kellyanne Conway, Assistant to the President and a senior counselor, but now working on the opioid addiction issue. Administrator Andrew Wheeler, who is with the EPA, Secretary Robert Wilkie with the Veterans Affairs, and finally, Undersecretary Jim Hubbard, U.S. Department of Ag, but of importance to our county, the United States Forest Service falls under his umbrella, and we know in this county we have quite a bit of that in our public lands inventory. Issues that were discussed that could have a direct impact on our county included energy production, management of the public lands, water supply, forest health, transportation funding was a big one for me, streamlining permitting for public projects, battling the opioid crisis, as I mentioned, reducing CO2 emissions, protecting children from lead exposure, EPA regulations, veterans issues, and reducing wildfire risks. The president came in unannounced and unexpected and joined the group for about 45 minutes, and the discussion continued, but he just elaborated on some of his secretary's comments that were made to us. The president also mentioned a couple of things that had not been mentioned by his secretaries. He took time to discuss the importance of vocational education in our public schools and then his goals to increase those opportunities. I was really honored to have the opportunity to represent San Luis Obispo County at the White House State Leadership Day conference, and the White House is really anxious to work with local elected officials across the nation to understand how they can help each county or each local jurisdiction with their particular unique issues. So I look forward to working with them as well, and this Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, which we were given a long list of contact information and had the opportunity to meet these folks. just to bring opportunity home here to San Luis Obispo County. So I just wanted to explain to the public that the expenditure that we'll be approving today. And with that, are there any other questions or any other items to pull? I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved as amended.
Second.
Okay. We'll ask the clerk to call the roll call.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. With that, we'll move on to the public comment period for things that are not on the agenda today. And thank all our public commenters that came in on the consent agenda. Give everybody a minute to shift. And we'll begin our public comment with Eric Greening, followed by Ben DeFada.
I'm Eric Greening. November 1st, New Times contained a tiny public notice on page 60 that announced for the few who found it a December 4th hearing pursuant to the Truth Act, now encoded as California Government Code Section 7283 et seq. Two issues to raise here, the inadequacy of the notice and a question on the appropriateness of the date and the scope of the hearing. To quote from Government Code 7283.1d, beginning January 1st, 2018, the local governing body of any county, in which a local law enforcement agency has provided ICE access during the last year, shall hold at least one community meeting during the following year, with at least 30 days' notice, and so on. The language sets up annual hearings reporting on activities of the previous year. Does this mean that the data is compiled beginning on January 1st, 2018, with a hearing to report on it the following year, which would be 2019, in which case December 4th, 2018 is premature and the hearing needs to be rescheduled and re-noticed, better noticed? Or does it mean the data compilation should have begun on January 1st, 2017, with 2018 being the year of the first hearing, in which case one wonders why it takes until December to get around to reporting on the previous year? One of two things needs to happen. Either the hearing needs to be rescheduled and re-noticed with 30-day notice that actually activates affected communities, or you can confirm the date 2 weeks from now, in which case getting the word out needs to be ramped up big time. The clear intent of the provision of 30 days' notice is that time is needed for word to spread through affected communities and that those planning to attend need lead time to get time off from work, arrange to trade shifts with someone, arrange child care, arrange transportation, and generally have time to prepare. The governor, in his signing statement on the Truth Act, referenced its consistency with paragraph 7 of subdivision B of section 3 of article 1 of the California Constitution, which affirms the public's sovereign right of access to the records and meetings of agencies conducting the public's business and the transparency of those agencies. Please spread word of the Truth Act hearing once you confirm the date or the appropriateness of the date in 2018 or 2019, and do this in the spirit of the California Constitution, which you swore to uphold. Thank you.
Thank you. Ben DeFado, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Board. Ben DeFado from Los Osos. My subject today is investigations of wrongdoings in this county by some that finally have come back to haunt those individuals that have done the evil deeds. Name of individuals who are finally being charged by law enforcement for their crooked ways will be deleted this morning. Subject number one under investigation is being charged with felony battery and serious injury. Subject number two under investigation is being charged with domestic violence and misdemeanor for dismantling a wireless device plus a Ponzi scheme and fraud. Subject number three under investigation is number one the same as above. Number four under investigation is being charged for taking bribes and conflict of interest. Subject number five under investigation are charges of felony and vandalism. Subject number six, under investigations for extortion, taking bribes, conflict of interest. Number seven, under investigation for conspiracy, perjury, and fraud. Number eight, under investigation for conspiracy, suborning, perjury, and conflict of interest. Number nine, under investigation for taking bribes. Number 10, under investigation for embezzlement, conspiracy, and perjury. Number 11, under investigation for conspiracy and embezzlement. Number 12, under investigation for embezzlement, fraud, conflict of interest, conspiracy. Number 13, under investigation for credit card abuses to those that work at the trash dump for hundreds of thousands of government dollars that was misspent. Subject number 14, allegations and investigations mentioned by the good people of this county told you what was going to happen when marijuana and other habituates become legal. Mega levels of corruption, rape, money laundering, pay-to-play, slavery, bribery, and so forth. And let's not forget those local politicians who attended a fundraiser by the marijuana people where thousands of dollars were donated to some politicians for their campaign funds for reasons you know what. Folks, it's all about there now. Let's see how many of those above people go to jail. Yes, the lawyers are going to make a lot of money trying to get those people from going to the big house where finally the citizens are going to see justice being done. Don't bother reading about it in the Tribune. It would hardly be there, maybe next to the obituary section. That should keep the DA busy for a while. Thank you.
Thank you. Linda Owen, followed by Gina Whitaker.
Good morning again, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. It's coming on wintertime. It's getting kind of cold. We're going to be looking at some rain coming in, and our homeless population is still unsheltered. Our mentally ill that are homeless are going to go through even harder times because they have probably less chance of than anyone. So I'm going to bring back up the idea, and if you look at the fires, the tragedy of 7,000 homes and 7,000 houses gone, we're looking at having to consider how we are going to give people emergency shelter and temporary shelter and possibly long-term shelter. So behind Cuesta College, there is open space that is being used for different private activities, as well as the California Conservation Corps has their offices and their housing out there. I'm urging you to really take a look, and I know some of the buildings that are there may need to be torn down because of the lead paint, et cetera, but we need to come up with something and a baby step towards getting some kind of long-term setup of a tent city, small house city is urgent, and it needs to be addressed. We can't keep pretending that something is going to come our way. So I urge you to please look at the possibilities out there, the lease of the land, and the reason for that site would be that you've got bus service, you've got education services, you've got Achievement House that also helps with handicapped you've got open space. You could actually have farm activities and garden activities going. You could provide a safe haven for some of our less fortunate. And I urge you to hurry up and begin. It cost $5.2 million, I believe, to house 100 people at the Prado Center. my ongoing concern of spending $14 million to house 100 animals is a way that money can be shifted around, and I think there can be some adjustment to really getting started with the housing tent city. Thanks.
Gina Whitaker, followed by Selena Lindahl.
Good morning. I come before you this morning to spread awareness of an important hearing mentioned by a previous speaker that will occur on December 4th in this chamber. The Truth Act, which was signed into effect by Governor Brown in 2016, took effect on January 1st of 2017. Truth, in this case, stands for Transparent Review of Unjust Transfers and Holds. And the act was passed specifically to bring accountability and transparency to how the local county sheriff's department interacts with federal immigration and customs enforcement, also known as ICE. Among its provisions, the Truth Act mandates at least one annual public community forum where members of the community, both those impacted by ICE activity in the jails, as well as allies such as myself, can hear from the sheriff and stand with those who are most vulnerable by potential collusion between the sheriff's department and ICE. In this first such hearing, activity occurring in 2017 will be addressed. The Truth Act also requires a 30-day advance noticing process so communities can be aware of the hearing. It is incumbent on this board and on the Sheriff's Department to post this advance notice and make sure to alert people that may want to attend or speak in support of transparency and accountability of the relationship between ICE and the sheriff. I wish to call your attention to this notice I've passed, which is placed was placed by the Sheriff's Department in the New Times on November 1st of this year. Not the Tribune, the New Times. In a font so small, it takes a magnifying glass to read it. One time, and the Truth Act is never even mentioned by name. On page 60, I have been in this county 37 years, and I'm a weekly reader of the New Times, and I have to confess, I've never read page 60. It took me just last week several phone calls to members of your board, the Sheriff's Department, and County Council to determine that our forum would occur here on December 4th with only 2 weeks to prepare, for me to prepare. Although it is too late to delay this hearing in favor of more enthusiastic noticing process, I wish to encourage all persons who care about the transparency and accountability of our county sheriff when dealing with vulnerable populations in the jail to attend this hearing on December 4th. And to this board and county council, I encourage you to advocate for a much earlier, more thorough notification process in 2019 and to schedule 2019's hearing, which will deal with activity in 2018, much earlier in the year rather than sandwiching it between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Selena Lindholm, followed by Lance Hilsengard.
Good morning. My name is Selena Lindholm, and I work at Cal Poly. I teach 350 students currently, from first years to seniors. 120 of them are seniors in my Economics of Poverty, Discrimination, and Immigration course. As you might imagine, one of their assignments is to observe the application of justice, especially with SB 54. One of their assignments is to observe this December 4th Truth Act forum, which I have just been, which has just been made known to me, to observe this application of justice and transparency. My question for you all is, what do you hope they observe? And what shall I tell them is the reason the meeting was so hard to find? I believe the meeting could be and should be moved to January or February in order to allow for real and meaningful public announcement and access and the transparency that we all value in this democratic process. Thank you.
Thank you. My last speaker slip, Lance, and if there's anyone else that wishes to speak, we can accept a slip up here.
My name is Lance Hilsinger. I'm a recently retired child welfare social worker. I'm here to talk today about SLCEA's contract the board will consider in closed session later today. In comparison to other civil service positions, child welfare social workers have an extremely high turnover rate. Hire a librarian, a sheriff's deputy, a tax collector, and 5 years later, you will likely have a librarian, a sheriff's deputy, or a tax collector. But not so with a child welfare social worker. Chances are that within that five-year period, many child welfare social workers will have come and gone. Very few child welfare social workers quit because they are tired of working with the drug addict, the alcoholic, parents who beat their children or each other. No, they leave because of the high demands, time demands of the job. Social workers, even in their normal duties, work evenings and weekends. One way to keep the high attrition rate high is not to pay the shift differential. When I first started working the county, if a social worker had to work in the evening because that was most convenient to the family, he or she was paid the evening shift differential. However, the shift differential was taken away years ago. Another way to keep the attrition rate high is to penalize social workers for working holidays. In a holiday work week, most employees work 32 hours and have 8 holiday hours. However, if a social worker works 8 hours on a holiday, works 24 hours the rest of the week, and has 8 holiday hours for a total of 40 hours, the social worker is still required to take 8 hours of vacation or sick time to make a 32-hour work week. The social worker working 32 hours in a holiday week, including 8 hours on a holiday, in essence earns half pay for working the holiday. Another way to keep the attrition rate high is, as currently proposed, to pretend to raise the standby rate while simultaneously changing work hour rules. Work hour rules that effectively mean the social worker will earn less than they do with the current contract. My daughter attends Cal Poly. For a while, she had a job delivering takeout for restaurants. Some nights, people wouldn't call, and she was paid a standby rate of $6 an hour, or more than double the amount that her father made being on standby to take children from abusive or neglectful homes. When working after hours first became mandatory, the standby pay rate was a third of the minimum wage. Raising this rate to a third of the current minimum wage still will not equate to my daughter's standby pay, but it would be a start. Raising the standby pay rate, restoring the shift differential, and not penalizing social workers for working holidays will all help reduce the exceptionally high attrition rate for child welfare social workers. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have one more speaker, Mayor Harmon.
There she is.
Thank you very much, Supervisors. I just wanted to echo the concerns of some of this community around the ICE reporting. I think that it's a really essential point that the community is better informed on this issue. I get messages on a consistent basis from community members who are concerned about ICE being in our community. The lack of, well, at least on for me, my personal understanding on when they're here and how often they're here has been hard to communicate with the community. And I think that transparency around this issue is key, since there's certainly a lot of fear. I think sometimes that fear is real, and sometimes that fear can manifest rumors and things like that that may not be accurate. And so it's been hard for me personally to get a handle on the impact of ICE in our community. So I would personally very much appreciate knowing that, and I think there's a lot of members in our community that have a concern and would love to be a part of that conversation. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Okay, that was
Madam
our last...
Chair, if I
yes.
could before we end public comment.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Just a couple of things. I do want to thank Ms. Whitaker who brought this to my attention some weeks ago on the hearing. I would like to dispel some anxiety about the noticing, because having been at this a while, I know that the noticing for almost all government hearings are tend to be obscure without any intent. So I thought if I could just clarify with our county council on how we do noticing, and then I'll follow up with a comment if I could.
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. The statute in question that requires the government entities to set this matter for hearing requires 30-day notice. It doesn't specify any other way. Under the law, when it just says you have to give notice, that generally means you give notice in a publication of general circulation, a newspaper of general circulation. So under the code section, the notice was done properly. The code section was cited. There's some language from the statute that's cited. And then beyond that, we also know that this item will be on the agenda and it will be agendized. So there was no intent to keep this quiet. It was simply done in the normal course of business and under the requirements of the statute. I would also say that this is the first year for all the counties that are doing these Truth Act hearings, and so this is our first go at it. And I know my office has been working with the sheriff's office in terms of the process of these hearings and the noticing, making sure that the public knows they're happening.
Thank you. And I just would say, I mean, essentially, we take out notices every week and all the time. And when it's a meeting that you happen to be interested in and that may be of some public controversy, this one is, tends to seem like we're hiding it, and we're not. That said, of course, I will talk to the sheriff about future meetings, and I think he would be open to whatever way we could better publicize it, because as Ms. Neal said, this is the first one. There was no attempt. When I followed up with Ms. Whitaker, it really, again, because this is new, there you know, it went through the standard noticing process, but we certainly always welcome community engagement and Cal Poly engagement and those sorts of things. So I think your presence at the scheduled meeting will help for future meetings as well. Thank you.
And I'll be a regular reader of page 60.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. I don't see any other requests to speak, so we'll close public comment and ask the clerk to introduce the next item.
Submittal of a resolution recognizing the 20th anniversary of the California Children and Families Act.
I'd like to call Wendy Wendt to the podium and ask Supervisor Gibson if you would read the resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is my great pleasure to read this resolution celebrating the 20th anniversary of a wonderful organization that I happen to have the privilege and pleasure of serving as this board's representative and as the chair of the First Five Commission. Now, we have with us today a large number of commissioners, former commissioners, other folks who have been involved in First Five's activities over the last 20 years. I'm going to let Ms. Wendt introduce all these great contributors. But the resolution reads as follows. Whereas 20 years ago this month, the voters in California affirmed their support for guaranteed funding dedicated to the state's youngest children and passed Proposition 10, the California Children and Families Act. And whereas the statewide program is now known as First Five to emphasize the tremendous importance of the first 5 years of a child's life when 90% of brain development occurs. And whereas First Five San Luis Obispo County joins fellow commissions across the state in responding to local needs and investing in local solutions to improve the lives of young children prenatal through age 5. And whereas over the last 20 years, First Five San Luis Obispo County has invested more than $32 million to create effective and essential services that help San Luis Obispo County's youngest residents grow up healthy, nurtured, and ready for school. And whereas more than 10,000 local families benefit each year from First Five investments in health, education, and family support. And whereas this unprecedented investment in California's youngest children and its future has made First Five the most significant and effective funder of early childhood development programs in the state, with much work left to do. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the 20th anniversary of the California Children and Families Act and commends the San Luis Obispo County First Five Commission and their partners in their efforts to provide our children with solid foundations and strong futures. If we're going to do a picture, at your pleasure, comments first. Sure.
Picture in a moment. No one leave.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Wendy Wendt, Executive Director of First Five San Luis Obispo County. I have just a few comments. On November 8, 1998, the wise voters of California approved Proposition 10, launching an unprecedented long-term investment in the lives and well-being of the state's youngest children and their families. The resulting California Children and Families Act established that this investment, levied as a 50-cent tobacco tax, would be distributed among all 58 counties who would work within their local communities with local stakeholders to make local decisions on how best to address the health, learning, and family needs of children 0 to 5. And so 58 First Five organizations were born, including here in San Luis Obispo County. The deep dedication and foresight of the founding team of staff and commissioners set the course for a new and impactful era of enhanced support for our county's youngest and most vulnerable residents. I'm going to call some of these people out, and when I do, if you could please stand and stay standing. Several of these original members of the First Five family are here today. Susan Hughes, founding executive director. You could please stand. Pacho Asajin, Biz Steinberg, and Stephen Hansen, our original team of commissioners. Did Ellen Harper make it today?
Please keep standing. Please help me in thanking them, for we stand on their shoulders. And other commissioners, both past and present, are here today. If you are a commissioner past or present, please join the standing members of the audience today. And children who have benefited from the programs of First Five, if you could please stand today. And funded partners, our grantee organizations, please stand if you are here today and have received funding through First Five. And all of our shared collaborators and friends of First Five, if you could please stand if you've had any involvement, participation, collaboration. Please join them in standing, both so that we can honor you and to stand together in solidarity for kids, our community's future and its highest priority. This is what we do in bar and bat mitzvahs. You may be seated. The voters knew it in 1998, and we know it now. Investing in early childhood is smart, no matter how you look at it. It's smart scientifically. 90% of a child's brain is developed before she hits kindergarten. It's smart economically. A dollar spent on quality early childhood support saves up to $13 down the road. And most importantly, it's important and smart ethically. Our worth as a society is measured by how we treat our children. 20 years into the story, and First Five San Luis Obispo County has so much to be proud of as an active partner investing in and advocating for young children. Over $32 million in funds have gone directly into the community to support a variety of programs, ranging from oral health to preschools, from breastfeeding to early literacy, from vision screening to family advocacy, from early intervention to parent education. We've put a local spin on state-level First Five programs, notably the Talk, Read, Sing campaign, and distribution of kits for new parents to area hospitals, clinics, and home visiting programs. First Five has been a leader in launching key initiatives throughout the county, including school readiness neighborhoods in Paso Robles and Oceano, the Children's Health Initiative, Martha's Place, the Children's Oral Health Coalition, the Children's Bill of Rights, Hands on Heroes, Help Me Grow, and more. While celebrating First Five's many accomplishments over the years, we also know that this work is never done. And we know, you all know, that First Five is but one partner, one voice in the ongoing and permanent work of ensuring that our young children get the best possible start in life. Tobacco tax revenue was never enough to fully address the needs of young children and families. It was always meant as a catalyst to activate shared investment in this critical life stage. First Five and the children we give voice to need all of us to prioritize them. They need government and philanthropy to invest in prevention and early education. They need employers to invest in their parents. They need all of us, whether we have our own children living at home or not, to recognize their value in all of our lives. First Five is here to help continue inspiring these commitments with all of you over the next 20 years and beyond. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have requests to speak. We're going to ask if Wendy will stay one more moment. We do have a representative from Assemblyman Cunningham's office, and we'll ask maybe Kayla to take the other podium for a presentation.
Thank you. I'm Kayla Smith, the District Director for Assemblyman Jordan Cunningham. I won't read the same proclamation, but I will say, as a mother of two children that have benefited from what First Five has been, that song, Talk, Read, Sing, is buzzes through our house. But thank you for your hard work. We're happy to recognize these 20 years and wait and hope for so many more. So, yeah.
Thank you, Kayla.
Thank you. And we do have some requests to speak, so we'll ask Mayor Harmon to return to the podium, followed by Dr. Hansen.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say a quick note of gratitude to First Five and all the work that they've done as a preschool teacher, mother of two, and mayor, and most importantly, Miss Heidi from Music Time, 20 years also this year. I very much appreciate the work that they're doing. I think we all realize that as electeds, especially, I hope you all agree that our main charge is to do our best for the future generations, and First Five is a huge part of that. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And Dr. Hansen, and will be followed by Maria Patino.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Dr. Steve Hansen. I was actually the first person appointed to the expanded Board of Commissioners at that time, and we looked around the community for what our problems were. Dental health came out surprisingly way above all the others. And then there was early education, and so on, and so many other good causes. I'm happy to tell you that the First Five group locally took to the State First Five Commission the awareness of climate change and ill health on the delicate bodies of young children as the emerging overall overarching concern for health in the future. So thank you, First Five, for that. It's so important. The doctors of the country have recognized that, and we started a multi-specialty society consortium on climate change and health about a year and a half ago. We have over 500,000 docs now represented that way. And we're housed at George Mason University, a conservative institution that has also recognized that fossil fuels are killing us. They're trapping it in the troposphere. We simply have to transition to a green solar wind battery-powered economy because we're hurting every person and every life form on the planet right now. So thanks, First Five, for your job there. Let's all get with a transition to a green economy as quickly as we can. It's so important.
Thank you. And Maria Patino, followed by Yesenia Silvas.
Hi. This is Maria Patino. I'm a parent for First Five for around 13 years. My daughter's older. There's 11th grade. There is amazing growth. There is for this program. Yeah, she's a leader and something. There is, I'm praised for the program. I had my older daughter for 11th grade. Now my little kids that now today it have 8 years, and he participated in the Raising and Reading the First Five, and now I'm great because he reading up and he stay in second grade, but reading in third grade. That's amazing. Now that's the program, the opportunity for me, a leader parent leader, and the promoter for this country. County, sorry. That's, I'm amazing. So thank you for five.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Yesenia Silvas. I'm a family advocate with Oceano School Readiness, which is funded by First Five, and I'm a district employee, but I've had the honor to be a family advocate in Oceano for 13 years now. And so my job is to work with families to help them, you know, understand and their fullest potential and help them succeed. So I do a lot of activities with families. I invite them into our programs like Literacy Hour, Raising a Reader, our kindergarten camp, and any resources that they need. And so I brought Maria Patino with me. I invited her and asked her because she is an amazing success story. All of her children, they were a part of our program. They participated in Literacy Hour, Raising a Reader, the first five preschools, kinder camp, and now, of course, like she said, she's a community leader. She calls me on a regular basis and refers families into our office for services, and a lot of those families trust her, so they feel that they can trust us, and I think that she's just amazing, and I'm very thankful to First Five for the opportunity to serve the families in Oceano. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next speakers, plural, Mary Lou Gomez, Alejandra Nunez, Fabiola Cortez, and Carolina Aguilar. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Mary Lou Gomez. I'm the school readiness site coordinator at Georgia Brown, which is in Paso Robles. I am a school district, and I've been doing this job for almost 15 years, and I have to say I love it every single day. First Five is an amazing organization. It's very supportive, collaborates with agencies. We collaborate with our agencies in Paso, in our county, and we have a small office where we also have a family advocate. First Five, with their support, we've been able to have counselors, counseling for our families. We connect them to services, and we also, as you can see, and they're going to go ahead and introduce themselves. We have students that have come through our program, whether they went to the preschool, the First Five preschool, whether they use resources available so that their families could stabilize, or they just a literacy hour, which we have both in English and Spanish and weekly. And they are amazing students. We have a university student, we have a high schooler, and we have also a middle schooler. I didn't bring a five-year-old because they're pretty short. I wanted them to introduce themselves.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Alejandra. I'm currently attending CSU Stanislaus, so I'm the college student.
Hi, my name's Carolina Aguilar, and I'm going to Flumson Middle School.
Hi, my name is Fabiola Cortez, and I go to Independence High School.
And these amazing kiddos have volunteered in the community. They're really involved in their community. Alejandra is here because of the fire. Otherwise, she wouldn't be here. When I called my son and say, hey, can you get a hold of Alejandra, whom I happen to know the family? And she's like, well, she's not going to be here. And then I called her sister, who is in high school, and she goes, oh, my sister is here. And so within less than 24-hour notice, she goes, of course I'll be there. And that's really supportive. Our community is so supportive. And thank you, really, again, to the First Five organization, because they really are making a difference in our community.
Thank you very much. Our last speaker, Sarah Zepeda. And if anyone else wishes to speak, you can turn in a card at this time.
Thank you so much. My name is Sarah Zepeda, and I'm the South County Safe Systems Coordinator. SAFE is a prevention and early intervention program for at-risk youth and families. And on behalf of SAFE, I wanted to be here today to just thank First Five for the amazing work that they're doing for pregnant mothers, infants, toddlers, preschool-aged youth in our community. They really give them a voice and make sure that that's reflected in the services that are available in this county. As it was mentioned before by Wendy, the 0 to 5 years are so crucial socially, emotionally, physically, developmentally, and I'm grateful that we're honoring this life stage the way that we are. And I know that there are areas for growth and work that we can still be doing. There are parents that remain uncertain regarding whether their children are developmentally on track or they have fear and uncertainty about about accessing services, and so SAFE hopes to continue to collaborate with First Five and some amazing other organizations and agencies like CAPSLO, Parent Connection, Martha's Place, to provide the necessary services for the 0-5 population and to make sure that all parents feel safe and empowered to access the help that they need. So I just want to say happy anniversary, First Five, and thank you so much for all that you do.
And with that, I'll bring it back to the board for comments and a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank everybody that here from First Five, current and past as well. And I think one of the speakers, Mary Lou Gomez, may have given you a good new nickname, Amazing Kiddos, for this this great program. I also want to thank the service of our colleague Bruce Gibson, and you know, this is one of those committees that the board has an opportunity to serve on, and it's one of those that I think when people serve on it, they really get into it. And I know that Bruce has, and I know that before that there was a lot of great work by my former colleague Kacho Asajian, who is happily here to represent that. Kacho was instrumental in a lot of, I know, because of I used to be neighbors with Susan Hughes, so I know how important Kacho was to that, and I know how dear the programs for children are to him. So with that, I thank you both.
Supervisor Compton?
So, yes, thank you. It was good to look out in the audience to see so many people here today about something so important with our children. So thank you all for all you do for our children, and it's very important. They are our future. And so thank you all. And, Wendy, you're amazing.
Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think it's wonderful. We got just a little bit of a taste of all the things that First Five has involved in, as we had a wonderful presentation by some of our early childhood educators and their alumni, which is particularly pleasing for me to see these fine young women coming back as graduates of First Five programs. You know, there's a lot more that First Five's involved in: vision screening for kids, dental screening for kids, support for breastfeeding, support for families. And I appreciate Supervisor Hill's acknowledgement. It's easy to get into First Five. It is a remarkable and positive experience to see how many caring people we have in this county. The only stress in serving there is that there are so many good things to do, so many needs, so many children who could benefit from this, and we only have so much money. And the money's actually declining because people are making the wise choice of not smoking. This is funded by tobacco tax. So I'm promoting people go out and buy cigarettes and throw them away. just a thought. But I, too, want to acknowledge my friend and former colleague, Kacho Asajian, who's the founding chair of First Five. 12 years of outstanding service. There is no person I know with a bigger heart, and especially a bigger heart for children. And I try every day to live up to your example, sir, the commitment to the kids in our community. And I thank you for being here. With that, Madam Chair, I'm proud to move approval of this resolution.
Okay, and I'll second that. And I, too, want to just say it's nice to have both Kacho and Biz in the room this morning as we recognize the 20-year anniversary. I know from firsthand experience, many years of teaching preschool myself, the impact that you make, and I've never come across such a dedicated group of folks as the people that work with the First Five. So thanks for being here. Thanks for all you do. And with that, we will roll call vote this motion to approve this resolution honoring you today.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Thanks again for being here. Give just a second and... And we'll ask the clerk to introduce the next item, please.
Submittal of a resolution recognizing the Cayucas Fire Protection District for 70 years of commitment to serving the community of Cayucas and District 2.
Okay. Okay, we'll give just one second more. Sometimes it takes just a minute for everybody to find their way out to the lobby. At this time, I'd like to call to the podium Fire Chief Howard Sanford. And we're going to ask Supervisor Gibson again to read this resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my honor to read this resolution in recognition of 70 years of service by an extraordinary institution within the community of Cayucas. And this one is particularly personal to me in that over the years I've lived in Cayucas, I've had reason to call on the services of the Cayucas Fire Protection District on at least three occasions that I can remember, and I am deeply grateful for them being there. Cayucas is a community that it takes pride in taking care of its own, and this the Fire Protection District has served honorably, nobly, heroically in many instances over these 70 years, and they are in transition now as County Fire takes over the protection of this community. So it is with a great deal of feeling that I read this resolution. Before I do, I should also acknowledge we have a member of the Protection District Board, Ms. Cheryl Conway, joining us as well. The resolution reads as follows. Whereas the Cayucas Fire Department was formed in the late 1930s to protect the community of Cayucas, and whereas the Cayucas Fire Protection District was formed by petition and Board of Supervisors resolution in 1948 as a registered voter district, and whereas the district has provided fire protection and emergency first aid to the Cayucas downtown area and Morro Strand area residents since that time by way of an all-volunteer company, and whereas the district has responded to approximately 375 to 400 calls each year, and whereas fire protection services will be transferred to the County of San Luis Obispo, County Service Area 10, upon dissolution of the district by LAFCO, and whereas this Board of Supervisors wishes to recognize the Cayucas Fire Protection Districts for its commitment to providing the community with the highest level of public safety services to protect lives and property in the community, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend the Cayucas Fire Protection District for 70 years of meritorious and conscientious mission of protecting and providing the community of Cayucas with the highest level of public safety services to protect lives and property in the community. Be it further resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend all the volunteers of the Cayucas Fire Protection District over the past 70 years for their dedication.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the board for its recognition of the men and women that have served the community of Cayucas over the last 70 years. It's been a selfless dedication to the Cayucas Fire Protection District, and thank you very much for that recognition.
Thank you, Howard. Thank you very much. And with that, I'll open the floor to additional public comments. I don't have any speaker slips on this item. I do want to recognize that Chief Gelbert's out there and will be taking on additional responsibilities. And I'll ask the board for any further comment.
I'm very proud of with the fire district's history, and appreciate Chief Dalbert's transition into the responsibility. And with that, we'll move approval of this resolution.
I'll second. And we'll ask the clerk for a roll call vote.
Mr. Gibson? Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. Okay, and with that, we will move on to item 17 on our agenda and ask the clerk to introduce the item.
Submittal of a resolution proclaiming November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month in San Luis Obispo County.
Great. And I'd like to call Ed Lowe and Chris Kington to the podium, please. And I actually have the pleasure today of reading this resolution. This is a resolution proclaiming November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month. And whereas hospice and palliative care empower people facing a serious or life-changing, life-limiting illness to live as fully as possible, ensuring people's dignity, choice, and quality of life. And whereas the hospice model involved an interdisciplinary, team-oriented approach to treatment, including expert medical care, quality symptom control, and comprehensive pain management as a foundation of care. And whereas a growing body of peer-reviewed research indicates that timely access to hospice and palliative care can decrease hospitalizations and emergency room visits and increase quality of life for patients and family caregivers. And whereas every year more than 1.4 million Americans living with life-limiting illness and their families received care from the nation's hospice programs in communities throughout the United States. And whereas Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, and Wilshire Hospice provide hospice care and bereavement counseling, respectively, to individuals within the county of San Luis Obispo. And whereas hospice and palliative care organizations are advocates and educators about advanced care planning that help individuals make decisions about the care they want. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month in San Luis Obispo County.
On behalf of all the hospices, my name's Ed Lowe. I'm the Senior Regional Director for Dignity Health, Home Health, and Hospice. It's a distinct honor and privilege to be here today relative to acknowledging National Hospice Month. It's also a privilege to be serving all of those facing a terminal or life-limiting illness, the patients, the families, and the community that we serve. So thank you so much for the affirmation here, and we continue to hope to do the good work of serving those in need. Thank you.
Thank you. I will ask if there are any public comments from the audience. I don't have any requests to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board for comments. And I do have one. The folks that work with hospice in this county provide a very important service. I don't know if it's something we love to talk about, end of life, so maybe for that reason, we might not think about this so much, but I know that each and every one of us know people and know families that have really appreciated and benefited from the health, from the help of one of these hospice organizations. I did have the pleasure of attending the annual National Hospice and Palliative Care Month luncheon that goes on here in this county annually last week, and they had a keynote speaker that was just fabulous. Gail Rubin, a pioneer death educator, is the title she puts with her name, but using humor, and when I say humor, she really did a great job, and using a lot of funny clips from old movies that we'd all recognize and that kind of thing. Using humor, we discussed for maybe 45 minutes, and were educated on many of the important issues associated with death of a loved one. And so I just really appreciate the educational aspect and the supportive aspect that hospice provides here in the county. So thanks for being here. And with that, we need a motion to adopt this resolution. Okay, Supervisor Hill and Supervisor Compton. And we'll ask the clerk for a roll call vote. It was just to adopt this, and it was Supervisor Hill, Supervisor Compton.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. Thank you. And with that, we'll ask the clerk to introduce the next item, number 17.
Submittal of a resolution recognizing November as National Adoption Month in San Luis Obispo County.
Which is actually 18. And we'll call to the podium David Platt, please. Welcome, and we'll ask Supervisor Compton to read this resolution.
It's my pleasure. This is a resolution proclaiming November as National Adoption Month in the County of San Luis Obispo. Whereas the County of San Luis Obispo recognizes the importance of providing children safe, healthy, and loving homes in which they may become a permanent part of the family through adoption. And whereas there are more than 120,000 children in the United States adopted annually. And whereas more than 5,500 children in California are adopted annually. And whereas 62 children in San Luis Obispo County will be adopted by the end of this year. And whereas to help these children have permanent, loving families and to support the families that provide these homes, the County of San Luis Obispo Department of Social Services is acknowledging National Adoption Month to raise awareness about the need for adoptive homes for local children to join other organizations to celebrate adoptive families in our community. And whereas this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will offer children the chance to live with loving, healthy, permanent families when they cannot live with their birth families, and encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of a child through adoption. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim November as National Adoption Month in San Luis Obispo County, and in doing so, urge all citizens to join in a national effort to raise awareness about the importance of adoption. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So again, my name is David Platt. I'm the supervisor for the Adoption Unit for Child Welfare Services in our county. And on behalf of the San Luis Obispo County Department of Social Services, I would like to thank the Board of Supervisors for taking this time to acknowledge National Adoption Month in San Luis Obispo County. I would like to mention how impressive it was, the first five group that was here, and the acknowledgement of the wonderful work that is done through that organization to help prevent situations that end up leading to child welfare involvement. And on behalf of our agency, I would like to just make the statement that it is not our goal, never our goal, to have a child end up in an adoptive home. And we applaud every effort by every individual and every agency in this county who works so diligently to help children be safe and sound in their homes of origin. And we would always prefer that that be the first line of defense. And so we would like to express our appreciation as a department for every ounce of preventative effort that's done. And if, frankly, if we had our way, we would work our way out of a job and we would never be needed. And I just wanted to acknowledge that. We would like to also express our appreciation to our partner agencies, and I'll miss some, but Seneca Kinship Center, Family Care Network, Pathways and Family Connections Christian Adoption Agency, and I want to add Community Mental Health and CASA for their ongoing efforts to serve the children and families in our community, and would like to include it in that Martha's Place, who offers such a great service. Most of all, we wish to express our heartfelt gratitude for the individuals in our community who have chosen to make a lifetime commitment through adoption to nurture, to support, to protect, and provide loving and secure homes for children in our community in need of homes such as these. Adoption is really about meeting the needs of one child. Every child, every individual has a need to know that they are significant and that they belong. We all need that. Once again, our thanks to the Board of Supervisors for providing this opportunity to express appreciation for all lives who have been and will be touched and changed through the process of adoption. Now, in conclusion, we'd like to present a copy of our annual foster care calendar. And if I may, I'd like to approach the board and just offer a copy to each one of you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We all have magic inside of us. Great saying for the front of the cover.
I think we should at least acknowledge the title of the calendar. It says, "We all have magic inside of us," which is true. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And with that, I'd like to open the floor to public comment. I have no requests to speak up here. We'll bring it back to the board for comments and a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second, and under discussion, let me just thank staff and the partner agencies that worked so hard on this extraordinary program. I've often thought that families who choose to adopt have performed an extraordinary act of caring and commitment, and we're very, very fortunate to have these folks in our lives, in our communities. Please know that First Five wants to continue to support adopted children in foster and fully adopted homes, and certainly on our radar, and we commend and appreciate the great work that you all do. So thank you.
Very good. And I believe we have our motion and our second. We'll ask the clerk for a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Compton?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. Again, thank you for all you do. And with that, we'll ask the clerk to introduce the last item on the agenda today, item 19.
Submittal of a resolution recognizing Carl Hansen upon his retirement after 23 years of service to the Behavioral Health Advisory Board.
Okay, so we've got Ann Robin.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Carl and folks to come up for the photo and then have Carl speak first.
Great.
Yeah. And it's my pleasure to be able to read the resolution recognizing Carl Hansen upon his retirement from 23 years of service to the Behavioral Health Advisory Board. Carl Hansen served in a voluntary role as a member of the county's Mental Health Advisory Board for 23 years and was instrumental in establishing the role of lived experience consumers in guiding the mission and vision of the community mental health system. Carl played an active role in the merging of the Mental Health Advisory Board with the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board to create the Behavioral Health Board and provide the county with guidance and feedback to establish and maintain effective programs for the community facing issues of addiction, mental health, and co-occurring disorders. Carl participated in stakeholder groups and provided innovative ideas in shaping the county's Mental Health Services Act program, including the development of the Service Enhancement Program, the Consumer Provider Retreat, and many more initiatives. And Carl established a strong relationship with county staff who were able to learn from his perspective and build greater capacity to reduce stigma and to promote the voice of peers within the system, including inviting Carl to attend visits from the state's Department of Mental Health and Mental Health Oversight and Accountability Commission to share his experience. Carl Hansen is being recognized here as an outstanding volunteer in our community and, more importantly, to the population of San Luis Obispo County who have learned from Carl and will be able to promote mental health and wellness for years to come. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors commends Carl Hansen for his 23 years of dedicated service to the people of San Luis Obispo, and we wish you a very happy and healthy retirement, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I just want to thank the Board of Supervisors over the years, the 23 years, for allowing me to be on the Behavioral Health Board. And I want to thank the Behavioral Health Board for allowing me to work with the couple of people that tried to influence the board to, if there was a dollar to spend, to spend it on the youngest mentally ill person first. And all of the directors said there was over 20% of California's population that was depressed. So if we could get that down to 10%, the amount of county services would plummet, and the income to the county would skyrocket. Thank you.
Personally, if I could, for your great advocacy on behalf of our community.
Oh, thank you.
So, a little picture right here.
Do you want to come up to the board and take a picture?
Thank you, Supervisor Giftham and Supervisors Ann Robin, Behavioral Health Administrator. I just want to mention that as your Behavioral Health Board members are all volunteers from the community, including community representatives, family members, consumers of behavioral health services, and other community representatives who have an interest in behavioral health, we truly appreciate the long dedication of individuals like Carl who have spent almost a quarter century serving our community as a representative for the people who most need behavioral health services. Carl's dedication was always to making sure youth were well served, and he was also had quite a bit of heart for the folks on the psychiatric health facility, even donating cards and other materials so that the patients in the facility would have recreational things to do. I just want to mention that he's joined by his partner Pam and his son Clovis, and we appreciate the support that they have also given Carl to be an upstanding and very supportive member of our community for so many years in serving the Behavioral Health Advisory Board. So I appreciate your recognition of him, and I certainly appreciate Carl and wish him many more years of joy with his family and thank him for all of his service. Thank you.
I will open this up.
Yep. Board of Supervisors, my name is Clint Wyrick, and I have the pleasure and stuff of being one Carl's now former colleague stuff as chair of the County Behavioral Health Board. It's been an absolute pleasure for Carl to be on our board. Not only is some of the things mentioned in the resolution, one of the areas when it came to that whole merging of the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board and the Mental Health Board side is sometimes people have more of a focus towards addiction treatment, others towards mental health. He was always one of those people who made sure that we had to focus on making sure nothing got ignored. Everything was brought together consistently again and again. And that's something that that's a little value that I'd gotten to see his pleasure because I was on the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board, and he was always going, well, mental health's important, but what you're talking about is very important too when he'd come to our board meetings. So it's been great to see him through all these years come and be such an advocate for the entire continuity of behavioral health. And also I do want to thank all of you for being part of his service by continually reappointing him to serve with us during that time. And on behalf of all of our colleagues on the board for the Behavioral Health Board, we want to thank Carl, and we're very happy that you're getting to be honored today. It's been a long time coming, Carl. So thank you, Board of Supervisors, for this for him.
Thank you, Clint. And Clint, will you fill a speaker for us? And it's nice to see Pam here, too.
Yeah.
comments, we'll bring back to the board for comments.
I'll just say, as we all know, this community is only as strong as its volunteers, and thank you. And with that, I'll move approval of this resolution.
I was just going to second it, but you didn't. That's fine. Thank you, Carl, for all your service.
Yeah, and all those years of dedication, and they continue, and so appreciated. So thanks for being here, and it's a well-deserved recognition. So we have a motion and a second to adopt this resolution. Roll call, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. Okay, with that, we will be going into closed session, and I'd like to open the floor to public comment on closed session. Seeing no one, we'll ask the council for a time estimate.
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. I'd say we'll take about 30 minutes today.
30 minutes, then we will adjourn to closed session. So thank you all for being here.